This is our second message from Ecclesiastes, a biblical philosophy of life. Last time, a little bit different. I don't think I've ever begun a message by starting with the conclusion. And yet, that's what we did last week. So just a quick review, one slide's worth. If somebody said to me, Greg, how do you interpret Ecclesiastes? My answer is this quick, read the conclusion first. Let's go there just to make sure we have a quick review. Last chapter, Ecclesiastes chapter 12. And we're going to read verse 13 through 14. I should have put that on a slide. I did not. If you'd like to open up to Ecclesiastes chapter 12. And I'll read verses 13 through 14. This is the conclusion of the book. It says, the first two words, Ecclesiastes 12, 13. The conclusion. When all has been heard is, fear God and keep His commandments, because this applies to every person. So how does the author, Solomon, I believe, conclude this wonderful book? Number one, fear God and keep His commandments. And now I'll read the next verse, 14. For God will bring every act to judgment, everything which is hidden, whether it is good or evil. Secondly, God will judge. So we know that, what? We should fear God and keep His commandments. Number two, we know that we're accountable to God. We start with the conclusion. This is a very hard book. So if we interpret any one verse outside of this conclusion, contrary to this conclusion, then we know we have the wrong interpretation. So we are going to return to this conclusion frequently because the author is telling us where he's going, and that's why we did the conclusion first. You say, okay, Greg, can we start the book? Sure, let's go. Chapter 1, here we go. And we're not going to get very far. We're going to stay in chapter 1, and actually we're only going to look at the very opening of chapter 1. So Ecclesiastes, chapter 1, and we talked about this a little bit last time. It begins, the words of the preacher, the son of David, king in Jerusalem, vanity of vanities, says the preacher. Vanity of vanities, all is vanity. I've called the message tonight, all is vanity. And there are many different interpretations of this book, but I'm looking for common ground on this point, and I found it. Everyone agrees, you can't figure out what this book means unless you know what vanity means. When you think of vanity, what comes to your mind? Vanity of vanities, says the preacher, vanity of vanities, all is vanity. I mean, it's not even vanity, it's vanity of vanities. That's a superlative. You know, we say Jesus Christ is not only Lord, He's Lord of lords. All is not only vain, it's vanity of vanities. It's like, whoa. So what's a vanity? When you think of vanity, what comes to your mind? Right? I mean, that's a vanity. Like a little makeup mirror with a stool. And you say, Greg, that couldn't be what Solomon's thinking about because that's a vanity. And he's not talking about vanity. He's talking about vanity of vanities. Well, how about that? Okay? I'd call that a vanity of vanities, a double vanity, a pretty nice looking setup in a bathroom. And you say, I don't think that's what he's talking about. Well, what else do you think of when you hear the word vanity? When you hear the word vain, what comes to your mind? Somebody who's very self-focused, who thinks that they're very maybe attractive. Somebody who likes to think like this gentleman in this picture. That would hit me as vain. Or you say, you know, I actually think of other people who are vain. Does he come to mind? Have you seen Beauty and the Beast? How many of you know who that is? Right? If you have children, you've seen that, okay? And here's Gaston. And he just believes he's very attractive. And I didn't look it up. I looked up his name, and I forgot to look up her name, but I believe it's Belle. And he wants Belle to... He can't understand why Belle wouldn't marry him, because obviously any girl, woman, would marry him. And we would all say, that's so vain. Is that what the Bible means? When it says vanity of vanities, verse 2 says the preacher, vanity of vanities, all is vanity. And some people say, no, that's not what it means. It basically means nothing's real. Everything's smoke. I read this from the Message last time. Smoke, nothing but smoke. There's nothing to anything. It's all smoke. And maybe you've heard the phrase, sometimes people talk and they're not really being sincere, and you just say, the guy's blowing smoke, don't worry about it. Or maybe sometimes somebody tells you something that, you know, I have this great opportunity to make a lot of money, you want to hear about it, and you say, it's all fake. And we would say, it's all smoke and mirrors. I don't believe a word of it. It's all fake advertising, if you will. Is that what Ecclesiastes means when it says vanity of vanities? And I'll do one more. NIV, meaningless, meaningless, says the teacher. Utterly meaningless, meaningless. Everything is meaningless. Is that true? Is what we're doing right now in this room meaningless? Is life meaningless, like the NIV translates? Is life really vain, like your ESV and New American Standard translate? I mean, what in the world does vanity mean? We're not going to understand this book until we talk about this word. In Hebrew, it's the word hevel. So, and you can look that up like in a Strong's Concordance. You don't have to know Hebrew. And they'll spell it in English, and they'll give you the three little Hebrew consonants there. That's the word. It's a word that means literally breath. So what the Bible is saying when it says vanity of vanities, it's saying breath of breath. All is breath. And it is a word that sometimes would be referring to breath or vapor, and not often, but occasionally it's used literally. And I'm just going to show you one example where it actually means breath or vapor or wind even is a close word. I'm reading Isaiah 57:13. You see it on your screen. When you cry out, let your collection of idols deliver you. Right? The idea is, hey, the Lord's saying, if you need help, then fine, run to your false gods. But the wind will carry all of them up and a breath will take them away. Just a vapor, a breath, and your false gods are gone. Isaiah 57:13. That would be an example where the word hevel, we translate it, many of our translations, vanity. And it's actually used literally, but frequently, and here's where I'm going to spend a little more time. It's a metaphor. We're not talking about real breath. We're talking about something that is associated with breath, is like breath or vapor or wind, something that is temporary, something that is transient. You know, you go out on a cold day, especially those of us from the north, and you go, whew, and there's breath. It's kind of like a mist, a fog. It's gone. It's just gone. That's the idea of hevel, that there are many things in life that are temporary, that are transient. Let me give you perhaps a few examples that will help here. Psalm chapter 39, verse 4 through 5, I have it on the screen. Lord, make me to know my end and what is the extent of my days. Let me know how transient I am. So you see the word transient. Behold, you've made my days as handbreadths. My lifetime is nothing in your sight. Surely every man at his best is a mere hevel, is a mere vanity, is a mere breath. Life goes by so quickly. So many times, Nancy, my wife, and I talk about the fact that here we are holding our grandchildren and some of your little children, and we'll talk about how it just seems like not that long ago we were bringing our three girls to church and holding them, carrying them, still in their diapers or on their way to Sunday school or whatever. And that time has gone by so quickly, like a breath. And that's the idea there that you see in Psalm 39, verses 4 through 5. How about another one, a briefer one? Psalm chapter 144, verse 4. Man is like a mere breath. His days are like a passing shadow. What's that word? Hevel. That's the idea of vanity. Man is like a mere vanity. His days are like a passing shadow. Shadows, what? They're moving. They're transient and they're gone. And maybe one that I think many of you will be familiar with, because you know this, you know, in the King James, I think it is, or maybe the New American Standard, charm is deceitful and beauty is vain, but a woman who fears the Lord, she shall be praised. Beauty is, Holman Christian Standard Bible, it's fleeting, it's hevel, it's vain. I mean, you could be an incredibly attractive, talking about a woman here, you can be an incredibly attractive, I don't know, Miss USA or Miss Universe or something, I don't know, and life goes by so quickly. And then, obviously, that woman would never, ever be considered eligible to run for that title again, because life goes on, and the normal changes happen, and our skin looks different, and our bodies change, and we change. And that's fleeting. And so we see this idea here that this word, havel, it's a word that means that which is temporary, that which is transient. Okay? You'll notice I did not say meaningless. Okay? There are many authors who would say they object strongly to the NIV's translation of meaningless. It is just wrong. And some of those same authors would say the ESV and the KJV and the New American Standard likewise missed the boat with vanity. Because what does vanity mean? The idea of the word is it's temporary. It's transient. And that's not a bad thing. That doesn't mean something is wrong. Let me see if I can show you, okay? Here's what we're going to do tonight. We're looking at the phrase, chapter 1, verse 2, vanity of vanity, says the preacher, vanity of vanities, all is vanity. And I've been studying Ecclesiastes as well as what other people have written about it. And I'm going to point out at least three ways that this word is used, okay? And you're going to see the emphasis here that I hope will give us a better understanding of the book, okay? And part of this I'm taking from Garrett's commentary, and I wanted to acknowledge that. And I've also been helped by a number of other commentaries as well. What does it mean when we say all is vanity or all is havel? Three things tonight. Number one, life is temporary. Life is havel. Or, again, if you prefer, temporary. I'll show you a verse or two from each one, okay? So life, and this will all be out of Ecclesiastes, and I'll put them all up. Chapter 6, verse 12. Who knows what is good for a man during his lifetime? During the few years of his vain life. Or, some translations have, the NASB has, futile life. I believe it's vain in the ESV, futile in the NASB. Who knows what's good for a man during the few years of his futile life? He'll spend them like a shadow. For who can tell a man what will be after him under the sun? None of us knows what the future holds. We're in this world. We're in this life. And it's just so temporary. It's so changing. Just like a shadow. And what will happen during our lifetime, what will happen in the future of this ever-changing temporary life? And you might be thinking, and that's horrible. It's not horrible. It's not horrible. Just because something is brief doesn't mean it's horrible. You know, I might have the opportunity to kiss my wife. And you say, Greg, that was a brief kiss. That's horrible. I would say, I liked it. Okay? Just because something is brief, it's not bad. So who knows what is good for a man during his lifetime? During the few years of his futile life. See, for some reason, vain has such a negative connotation, feel, for most of us. Which is why some people object that they never should have translated it vain in the first place. But life is temporary. It's always changing. Let me show you maybe a few other verses in Ecclesiastes. Ecclesiastes 9:9 in the New American Standard. Enjoy life with the woman who you love all the days of your fleeting life. And then the ESV, the idea they're your wife. Enjoy life with the wife whom you love all the days of your vain life. See, and I hear vain life, and it's like, your vain life. No. You know, here you are, and life is short. And if you're married, enjoy it with your wife. Nothing wrong with that. In fact, there's a lot right about that. And the idea here is life in this world goes by so quickly. And we'll talk more about this even next time, but that was Ecclesiastes 9:9. How about chapter 11, verse 10? Childhood and the prime of life are vanity. You say that means they're meaningless. No, they're not meaningless. They're brief. So the New American Standard translates Ecclesiastes 11:10, childhood and the prime of life are fleeting. And this reminds me so much. Now, once we go into the New Testament, obviously we're going from Hebrew to Greek, and so we're not using that Hevel word anymore. But can you think of a verse that James wrote that sounds kind of similar to this? How about James 4:14? Yet you do not know what your life will be like tomorrow. You are just a vapor that appears for a little while, and then what happens? It vanishes away. Life is very, very short. It's very brief. That's the idea of Hevel. That's the first thing that we've seen. Life is, remember we're talking about Ecclesiastes, is a philosophy of life. If you want to have a biblical philosophy of life, you have to realize life is temporary. Life is brief. Life is like, can you see that picture? It's a sandcastle. Somebody took the time to make a beautiful sandcastle. And I don't know if it's clear from the back, but that's a wave coming, and a wave's about to hit it. And as soon as that wave hits that sandcastle no longer exists. Okay? So does everybody see that? I want you to look at that, and I want you to think about it. So what's the moral of that story? Don't build a stupid sandcastle. It's so vain. We're going to the coast, right? I remember someone told me, Christians don't go to the beach. We're going to the coast, okay, with our grandkids. So if my little grandson says, hey, Papa, can we make a sandcastle? What am I going to say? I'm going to say, no, it's vain. The wave's going to hit it. I mean, we're either building it with cinder block, buddy, or we're not doing it. Guys, there's nothing wrong with building a sandcastle. Nothing wrong at all. But you know what? Don't live for it. Don't live for it. Don't spend your life dreaming about sandcastles, because they only last until the tide comes in. They're not wrong. They're not worldly. It's not something you should avoid. That's what life is like. I mean, think about it. You know, we could say, how long does marriage last? Well, marriage only lasts until one spouse dies, then your marriage is over. Well, then why hassle with getting married? Just forget about it. And I think we would say, well, no. While we're here in this life, by God's grace, some of us will choose to get married, and we'll enjoy it by God's grace, and life will go on. And then one spouse passes and is promoted, I trust to glory, and the marriage is over. You say, and then the marriage was vain. The marriage was wonderful. And yes, by the way, it was vain, if that's how you choose to translate Hevel. That's the word we're looking at. It just means that life is temporary. Don't live for things in this life, but please, don't come to the false conclusion that somehow then it's wrong to make a sandcastle. See, that's what the author, Koheleth, would want us to understand. That's one usage. Now, the word Hevel can be used differently, okay? You say, give me a second example. A second example would be this, a second category. life is not only temporary, life is sometimes frustrating. You say, what do you mean by frustrating? There are inequalities in life. There's things that happen that just aren't right. And if they were temporary, that would be a blessing. People get hurt. People who do good things are mistreated. And sometimes people who do horrible things get away with it. That happens in this life. So you say, that's temporary. No, the problem is that it's not temporary. Havel sometimes is used to describe that. That things don't go the way they should. And sometimes ungodly people prosper. And godly people just, life does not seem to go well for them. That's in Ecclesiastes chapter 7. Here's one example, verse 15. I've seen everything during my lifetime of futility. Remember, that can be translated vanity. There's a righteous man who perishes in his righteousness. And there's a wicked man who prolongs his life in his wickedness. That doesn't seem right. I wish that guy who is wicked would perish early in life. And I would kind of hope that the person who follows Christ would have the lengthy, satisfying life. You say, Greg, does that always happen? No, it doesn't always happen that things go the way we expect it. And sometimes people get away with things. You say, just give me one name. O.J. Simpson. Case closed. And we say, that's not right. Lord, it shouldn't be that way. It's just so frustrating. And it is. And sometimes life is frustrating. Ecclesiastes 7:15. How about Ecclesiastes chapter 8, verse 14? There is futility, that's havel, vanity, which is done on the earth, and that is, there are righteous men to whom it happens according to the deeds of the wicked. So righteous people are treated as if they've done wicked things. On the other hand, there are evil men to whom it happens according to the deeds of the righteous. I say, this too is, and I could have underlined it a second time, futility. This is so frustrating. It really shouldn't be this way. But the fact of the matter is, a lot of times, life is that way. Greg, do you understand everything that happens in this world? Of course I don't, and neither do you. And don't pretend that you do. And you know what? Sometimes don't even try. People say to me, why did this happen? And the biblical response is, the Lord knows, we don't know. But trust the Lord. You say, but I'm so frustrated. I share your frustration. Solomon shares your frustration. Life is frequently havel, meaning life is frequently frustrating. It's just that way. Life is havel. Life is frustrating. And we try to understand what's going on, and it's just so difficult. And we don't know why things take place the way they do. Okay? Here we have Ecclesiastes being havel, meaning life is temporary, meaning life is frustrating. Last one, meaning life is also, sometimes at least, unsatisfying. You say, what do you mean that life is sometimes unsatisfying? Okay, Ecclesiastes 1:14, I'm going to point out actually a couple of different phrases in this one. And these are going to be a couple of key phrases. I've seen all the works which have been done under the sun, and behold, all is vanity and striving after wind. Let's start with that phrase, under the sun. What in the world is Solomon talking about when he talks about that which is under the sun? It's the idea of here's the earth and here's the sun. And so whenever Koheleth talks about life in this world, he calls it life under the sun. It's life in this world as we know it. You say, and that's a horrible thing. Well, I mean, the world is cursed and we suffer and there are challenges. But there's nothing mystical or magical about the phrase under the sun. And as we talked about last time, it's not saying that this book is a book that is absent of divine revelation and it's Koheleth just telling you what he thinks as a man. It's not what the phrase means. Just take it at face value. Under the sun. Life in this world. This is how things go. So, I have seen all the works which have been done under the sun, and behold, all is vanity. It's frequently unsatisfying. In fact, here's now another phrase. It's kind of like ESV, chasing the wind. New American Standard, it's kind of like striving after the wind. We're chasing the wind, striving after the wind. One commentator put it this way, it's kind of like herding cats. Okay? You say, have you ever tried to herd cats? No. Okay, I think I understand the idea would be you just can't do it. How do you grab the wind? How do you chase the wind? You can see the effect of it. You try to grab it, but you can't put your fingers on it. That's frequently how life is. Life in this world is frequently what? It's frequently frustrating. Thus, it's frequently unsatisfying. And we spend our lives doing things, doesn't mean they're wrong things, and in this life that is brief under the sun, and we frequently find ourselves not feeling satisfied. Ecclesiastes chapter 2, verse 11, we'll see the same thing. Thus I considered all my activities which my hands had done, and the labor which I exerted. And behold, all was vanity. Okay? And striving after wind. And there was no profit under the sun. I spend my life working hard, doing things. You know, you go to work every day. Monday morning, you go to work looking forward to Friday so you can have the weekend. And the weekend's over, and you go back to work. And you kind of maybe, is your job? I don't know, it's okay. I don't know if I like it or not, many people would say. And then the weekend comes, and you hit a few golf balls, you catch fish, you go for a motorcycle ride, whatever. And then you go to work, and life goes on. And you find yourself thinking, is this all there is? I mean, shouldn't there be more to life than this? And people struggle with that. And they reflect on that. And I think we've all heard of the classic midlife crisis, they call it. Where there, and if you're not successful, you can't have one. But if you're a successful guy who gets what you want, and you have what? You have a nice family, you have a beautiful house, you have the nice cars, you have everything you've always wanted, and you look around and you say, Lord, I got everything I've been living for. How come deep inside I'm not really happy? Because you're finding out that life is unsatisfying. There's a house in our neighborhood. And there was a gentleman, I would assume he was the parent of the couple that was living there, and I never really got to know him. He would be cutting his grass like every 3 days. And I would wave at him, but he would never look up. Now, maybe I should have been more aggressive. Maybe I should have went out, walked up to the grass and said, hello, sir, my name's, you know, whatever. But I didn't. He worked so hard keeping his lawn nice. The guy would pressure wash his driveway a couple times a year. I mean, he'd be pressure washing it, and I'm like, you know, sir, I don't even think the part that you've just cleaned is any more clean than what you're about to clean because you clean it so often, it's not dirty. And he worked so hard at this, and he passed away. And his kids, I assume, continued there, and the home fell into disrepair, and the grass has weeds everywhere, and they quit the fertilizing and the irrigating, and the mulch beds filled up with weeds. And I thought, he spent so much of his life under the sun, working on that yard. And now it's one of the least attractive yards in the subdivision. It's ugly. And then somebody else came by and bought it and made it look very, very nice and worked hard at it. And I thought, here we go again. And then guess what? The house sold again and fell into disrepair. And it's just over and over. And has it not ever hit you as you've cut your... Or let's go inside the house. You know, how many times have I made this bed? And it's messed up every morning. And I make it, and it's messed up. How many times have I run the dishwasher or did a load of clothes? And it's over and over, and my life is over. And come on. Who's going to die saying, well, you know what? At least I think I had the nicest grass in the subdivision. My children always had clean socks. Every time. I'm ready to die. And there's nothing wrong with that, but the point is, it's what? It's Hevel. It's unsatisfying. And that's how life is. Ecclesiastes chapter 2, verses 1 through 2. I said to myself, come now, I will test you with pleasure, so enjoy yourself. And behold, it too was futility. I said of laughter, it is madness. And of pleasure, what does it accomplish? I was talking to one of my girls, I won't say which one, and we were in a certain social setting, and there was a group of high school girls nearby. My girls are out of high school, out of college, young adult ladies now. But there was a group of high school girls, and if you're a high school girl, this is not meant to be condescending, okay? But one of my girls said, Dad, when I was in high school, was I like that? You know, and what does a wise dad say? He says, what's for lunch? You know, right? I mean, they're laughing at things that aren't that funny, way too loudly, acting so immature, it's meaningless, it's madness. I mean, what does this accomplish? And that's what Hevel is. It's not necessarily wrong, but it doesn't truly bring lasting satisfaction. Put all this together. All is vanity. All is Hevel. Life is temporary. It doesn't mean it's wrong. It's frustrating. It doesn't mean it's wrong. It's unsatisfying. And this is the life we have. And that's what we all need to understand. Okay? How many of you are familiar with the show? Baby, I call it Chip, because the guy's name is Chip. What? Fixer Upper. How many of you know the show Fixer Upper? Okay. I never heard of that show. And then somebody mentioned it, that there's a show that they buy like an older house and they pour a ton of cash into it. And then they make it look nice. And that's the show. And I actually enjoy watching it. I don't watch television, you know, except for during college football and then during the Major League playoffs or the NBA playoffs. That's the only time I watch football, watch sports, okay? And then apart from sports, I don't watch it. But I put on the show once, Nancy and I watched it, and the guy's name is Chip, and I just think he's kind of funny. So we started watching the show. I think I've watched it maybe 5 or 6 times, okay, and enjoyed it. 5 or 6 times one show, that would be a lot for me. And so we're watching this show, and just a couple weeks ago, maybe just like 2 weeks ago, and I got Ecclesiastes on my mind. There's a couple, and they say to Chip and his wife, I forget what her name is, but Mrs. Chip, and they say, we're looking for a house, but we want a lot of land. And why do you want land? Because we found a big piece of land, and it was under contract, and somebody took it. And they just, right from under us, they took it. So Chip and Mrs. Chip take them out, and they go, and they look at this big, beautiful Texas, like, piece of land, I don't remember, we'll just say 35 acres with the big lake in the middle. And they say, yes, we want it. And Chip says, well, how about if we show you other property? And she says, no, we want it, we want it. And, well, don't you want to look at anything else? No, because we waited too long. Someone took it from us. We want this before anybody else sees it. So real quick, they buy it. They close on it. And here's my point. Chip says to her, okay, the property's yours. Now we can start working and making the house nice. What do you think? She just says, I am so glad we have it. No one can take it from me now. And I looked at Nancy and said, she never read Ecclesiastes. She wouldn't have said that. And it's gone. It's a vapor. It's so temporary. You will find it frustrating and sometimes unsatisfying. That's how life is. That's one illustration. I close with a different illustration. Two summers ago, actually, I think it was, I started reading Titan. Biography of John D. Rockefeller, at the time, late 1800s, richest man in the United States, perhaps the world, I'm not sure. I should have looked it up, I forget. It's like 800 pages long. I really enjoyed it, but, you know, I thought, wow, this, you know, I'm a third of the way through. And so I set it aside, but I'm back at it. And now I'm about three-fourths of the way through it, enjoying it immensely. I haven't figured this out. I need to read more. Is he maybe a believer? When he made his money in Cleveland, anyone who's anyone is going to the Episcopal Church. He won't go. There's a fashionable Baptist church. He won't go. He goes to the small gospel-preaching missionary Baptist church where he taught Sunday school because he wanted people to believe in Jesus. And he would talk about his faith in Jesus very openly. Now, what was going on in his heart, I don't know. But even when he became incredibly wealthy, and people said, like, why don't you, like, up your lifestyle a little bit? He very much disliked any type of ostentatious show of wealth. Again, like the Vanderbilt estate. He found that completely repulsive, that the Vanderbilts would spend all their money on these big landmarks. He could have done all of that and more, but he would not, because he thought it would dishonor God. That's how seriously he took money. He retires the richest man in the world, and I should have wrote how old he was. He was either in his late 40s or his early 50s. And he's the richest man in the world. He was worth more money than many countries. And he took it very seriously, a mission from God, that he was now to start giving away his money. So he wanted to establish a seminary to train Baptist ministers who believed the gospel to preach the gospel. He wanted a very high-level seminary, and he bankrolled it. And he is the founder of the University of Chicago. The University of Chicago. A place where you should be able to go and study the Bible so that you can tell people about Jesus. And so you can, the University of Chicago. Guys, that is not a conservative school. That is a bastion of anti-God thinking. That is the last place a Christian would go to be strengthened. And I just pulled up the University of Chicago website, and this is what I found. University of Chicago, we're looking for out LGBTQ, identifying grad, postdoc, professional students, faculty, and staff to serve as mentors for other LGBTQ students. Boy, I hope I remember this. Lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, queer. Those are the kind of faculty and doctoral students we want so they can mentor all of the LGBTQ students on campus. This was a guy who refused to go to dances because he thought they were worldly, who would not let his kids play with cards. On Sundays, he was a Sabbatarian. And he would not allow them to do things other than read their Bible and pray. That's how seriously he took Christianity. I hope he was a believer. I don't know. But his health broke. His health broke in part because he gave millions, which in today's economy would be hundreds of millions of dollars, to the University of Chicago. And they would spend it and ask for more, and spend it and ask for more, and spend it and ask for more. And he didn't necessarily agree with what they were doing, but they said, basically, just shut up, give us your money. And it bothered him so much, his health broke. Here's a guy who spent so much of his life just wanting to make money. And again, I'm not saying he's a hero, because there's some questionable business practices, and I guess it just depends whose viewpoint you read. But you would think, now that he made all this money and wants to establish a school to help people know the gospel, everything would go well. It didn't. And he ends up saying, I wish I would have never founded that school. It's broken me. Not financially, but physically, and perhaps emotionally. You say, what did he find? That life is havel. But that doesn't mean it's meaningless. And that's our conclusion tonight. Life in this world is havel. It's not meaningless. What does that mean? 3 points and we're done. Just review. Life is transient. So what's the message? Don't live for what is temporary. Live for what is eternal. Number two, life is frustrating. I don't know why things happen the way they do. So trust the Lord and don't try to figure it out. Number three, life is unsatisfying. So if you look to anyone or anything other than Christ, you'll always come up empty. Life is havel. It's transient, it's frustrating, it's unsatisfying. But it's not meaningless. It's not pointless. It's not smoke. It's not vain, as most of us feel the word vain. It's brief, so live for what's eternal. It's frustrating, don't try to figure it out. It's unsatisfying, don't look to this life to be satisfied. You say, wow, it sounds like a philosophy of life. That's exactly what it is. That's exactly what it is. That's what the author means when he says, vanity of vanity, saith the preacher, Koheleth, all is vanity. You say, Greg, okay, so what am I supposed to do as I go through this life of havel? And that will be our third and final introductory message, Lord willing, next week.